You're listening to North Shore Community Radio, broadcasting at 90.7 FM WTIP Grand Marais, 90.1 FM WGPO Grand Portage, 89.1 FM WKEK Gunflint Lake, and on the web at WTIP.org. This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene. Today we're speaking with author Mindy Mejia about her new novel, Leave No Trace. Mindy is the author of The Dragon Keeper, which came out in 2012, and the suspense novel, Everything You Want Me to Be, which came out in 2017. She received a BA from the University of Minnesota and an MFA from Hamline University. She's lived in the Twin Cities nearly her entire life, where she held jobs ranging from apple orchard laborer to global credit manager. Leave No Trace was published in September by Emily Bessler Books, a division of Simon & Schuster, and received a star review from Kirkus, who called it an engaging mystery and a haunting meditation on grief, abandonment, and the lost places within ourselves. Welcome to Superior Reads, Mindy.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Can you give our listeners who haven't heard much about your book yet a brief synopsis of Leave No Trace?
Yes, I would be happy to. So 10 years ago, a man and his son voyaged into the Boundary Waters and disappeared. Their campsite was found ravaged by what looked like a bear. They were put on the missing persons list and presumed dead until a decade later when the son emerged. He was found violent, uncommunicative, and ransacking an outfitter store. The authorities brought him to a psychiatric facility in Duluth, where he meets assistant speech therapist Maya Stark, who is our point of view character. Maya is charged with making a connection with this boy who came back from the dead. But Maya, whose own mother abandoned her, has secrets too. And as she is drawn closer to this boy, who is no longer a boy, she becomes willing to risk everything to help him find the father who's disappeared from the known world.
That's great. Oh, I loved the book. Absolutely loved it. And I loved how you tied the two characters' stories together. Where did the idea for the book come from?
Yeah, so this one, all of my books seem to have a fairly long roots. There's a seed that gets planted. This one actually came to me, or the beginning of it was sparked when I read a story in 2013. I think it was on NPR. Mm-hmm. It was the story of the Ho Van family, a father and son in Vietnam who had been living in the jungles of Vietnam for 40 years. This is a true story.
Wow.
The Ho Van Tan was living in his village in Vietnam during the Vietnam War, and some type of explosion happened in the village and killed most of his family. He scooped up his infant son, Lang, and ran into the jungle, never to return.
Wow.
So
40 years.
For 40 years, they lived in the jungle, moving higher and higher up this one mountain. They built their own treehouse and hunt and cultivated their own food. And but then a relative had became aware of the Ho Vans, their family, that they were out there. They made contact and found out that Tan had grown very sick. Mm. And so he was in his 80s, and they went in and they brought Tan and Lang out. And I was just mesmerized mostly by these photos of Lang, this 40-year-old man who was obviously an accomplished hunter and caregiver,
mm-hmm.
But had very little language and absolutely no conception of human society apart from his father. And I just wondered what that would be like to be an adult, you know, halfway through your life, and then be introduced to this world that we all live in and have become so inured to and just take for granted to have to confront that for the first time. And so that's when the characters of Josiah and Lucas Blackthorne started in the very, very back of my mind.
Oh, that's a great story. So for you, did the characters come first or did the story come first? Which do they both kind of come together at the same time?
Yeah, I would say the characters do come first, like the Hovan story,
mm-hmm.
or my first novel, The Dragon Keeper. I was watching an interview with a zookeeper and started just thinking about this woman and her worldview and her point of view on the world. And so that the characters do tend to come first for me. And then the story, but it's not necessarily a book, of course. It's not a book until you have a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I have these characters that kind of just are wandering around in my head.
Yeah.
And until the story appears and I make that connection and the plot starts to come, then I know it's a book and then I can run with them.
Okay. Well, so when you start, do you know how it will end?
I do. I always have an ending in mind. But sometimes when I'm writing, the ending changes.
So do you outline? Are you meticulous? Or do you kind of just let the characters take it away? Or just let your, you know, sit down at the page and let yourself be surprised?
It's a very, well, you know, there's two types of writers. Mm-hmm. You know, then there's the plotters and the pantsers. And so the plotters are outlining and they're creating the whole story structure in advance. And they sit down and they write it out. The pantsers are the ones that just sit down and see what comes to them, you know, see where the characters take them.
Uh-huh.
I'm a pantser by nature.
Okay.
And so I've tried to turn myself into more of a plotter and do more outlining in advance. But usually the problem is that I sit down and I write and I'm trying to write to this outline and the characters just take the story and run with it. And I know how psychotic that sounds.
I think it sounds like fun, actually.
Yeah.
I suppose you think about those characters when you're not sitting at the page, too. Like, you wake up in the middle of the night and...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Just the same way that, you know, you've been searching for a name or, you know, something in your regular life, and you think of it 3 hours later, or, you know, when you're in the shower and have no way to write something down.
Right.
That's generally where I get my best ideas, you know, when I understand how the things are going to move forward is when I have no ability to write it down.
Well, hopefully you have a good memory.
Yes.
How long did it take you to write Leave No Trace?
This one I started writing it when we were in the process of selling and marketing Everything You Want Me to Be, which came out in 2017.
Uh-huh.
So it began in 2015, and much like Everything You Want Me to Be and The Dragon Keeper, I was working a corporate job full time, so I started writing this book like those on my lunch breaks at work.
Wow.
And so it was a very, very kind of a slow process. I would just, you know, shut my door and close one computer and open another and write for half an hour or however much time I had. So that's when it started. But then last year, after Everything You Want Me to Be came out, Emily Bessler, my editor, whose imprint, Emily Bessler Books, is where my last two have come out from, she
mm-hmm.
offered me a contract for Leave No Trace. And she said, and I want it, you know, within 6 months. And I was like, lunchtime timeline is not going to work anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to finish it and have it ready in that quick of a timeline. So that was the point where I actually left my corporate finance job. So I've been writing full time for a little over a year now.
That seems like such a great luxury.
It is.
And
it took a little bit. Oh, go ahead.
Were you under contract then with Emily Bessler for this book before then? So it was like a three book contract, or?
So far, it's been a single book contract each time. So,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is actually a little bit more freeing for me as a writer. Then I can just focus on, you know, I'm writing the next story that seems organic and is genuinely what I want to work on. And then hopefully Emily will want to buy it.
There you go.
Yes.
You brought up Dragon Keeper, and I, to be honest with you, I've read both Leave No Trace and Everything You Want Me to Be, but I had not read Dragon Keeper yet. And that one, just reading the synopsis, seems like a much different kind of book.
It is, yes. It can be called an eagle-lit thriller. I mean, you can bend, you know, the very edge of the thriller genre and put it in there, but it is very much its own animal. The Dragon Keeper was my thesis project when I got my MFA at Hamline.
Okay.
And I read a story about a Komodo dragon who had a virgin birth at the zoo, at the Chester Zoo in London.
Wow.
When I was there on business one day. And I was fascinated by that. And like I mentioned, saw this piece, this interview with the zookeeper that was in charge of that dragon. And it just got me thinking a lot about zoos and their role in society and evolution in general. I didn't know Komodos could reproduce asexually. And that just facts kind of blew me away. And there's certain other animals where it's happened in as well. So I decided to create a fictional zoo here in Minnesota called the Zoo of America, which I imagined was like attached to the Mall of America and the Water Park of America in the Bloomington, Minnesota.
Okay.
And created this zoo and put a Komodo and a zookeeper there and just looked at the human-animal relationship without any, you know, strong bias on either side and just what it should look like, what it should be. But it did kind of turn into a thriller.
Oh, gosh. Well, these other two books, Leave No Trace and Everything You Want Me to Be, have been classified as thrillers, suspense novels. But the themes that you address seem to be much more complicated and nuanced than those that I've read in this genre. Would you classify them that as suspense or thrillers? And how would you describe them?
Yeah, I think suspense is it's a good way to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
Suspense, thriller, you know, those terms are sometimes interchangeable. For me, a suspense is a craft element. You know, suspense should be in every book that's written.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, it's like point of view, it's like setting, plot, character, and suspense. You know, you have to have it. If the reader doesn't want to keep turning the pages, they're going to put the book down.
Right.
You know, you have to have that element of the unknown and weave in, you know, this idea that it's fun to not know. You know, this kind of dichotomy of the taking pleasure in the unknown and what, you know, that makes you turn those pages and,
mm-hmm.
and makes you read until 3 a.m., you know, just so you know what happened.
Right.
So that's something that I think the suspense should be in every book in some manner. There's always questions that need to be answered. There have to be. Otherwise, we're going to put those books down, right?
Right. So how do you, you know, is there some magic formula to create and sustain that tension in your novels? Because personally, like, I would want to just quick get to it. And
right.
that isn't very fulfilling for the reader. So do you have a method? I mean, how do you give away just enough but not too much?
Yeah, it's a definite, that's the part where you really do have to plan and plot. So, and to make sure that you're laying enough clues and raising enough questions to keep the reader going. I learned suspense from Mary Logue, who she's a teacher at the Hamline MFA program. She writes the Claire Watkins mystery series that are also set in Minnesota. And she had a great way of describing it. And when you're writing suspense, you can think about it in terms of questions. So there should be a question that's raised on the first page of the book. And that question can lead to an answer on page two, but the answer to that question should lead into another question. You know, the character is walking down a long hallway and there's a noise, you know, at the end of the hallway behind the door. Well, what is the noise? She goes and she opens the door, and the answer to what the noise is well, it's the screen banging against the window, and the screen is ajar. Well, there's the answer to the question. That's what the noise is. But now, who is in her house, or who broke in? Why is the screen ajar in the window?
Mm.
So the answer to the question should raise a new question, and the new question should always raise the stakes. So I always think of it in terms of questions, and I'll go through and edit. I'll go through an entire draft of the book before I hand it in and just look at it in terms of those questions.
That is a great answer.
Well, thank you to Mary Logue.
She was a great teacher.
Yes,
because you learned it well. Well, one of the things I love about this book and your other book is that your characters are always sort of flawed and messy. They have punk rock dyed hair and complicated families. And they make lots of mistakes. What is it about this type of character that intrigues you?
I've always been drawn to people who are inherently, maybe not decent, but they have a strong moral compass. You know, they're doing things that they feel is right or that they believe could lead to something good. But at the same time are deeply flawed and are making decisions and terrible mistakes.
Yeah.
It's never really been interesting to me to write that evil villain, you know, because even though it's horrific and a train wreck, I mean, you can't help looking at it, it's still kind of one note.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still something very flat about a just completely dark, evil, you know, character. So I've always tried to write into the gray in everyone. And on the same, you know, on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, a very, you know, saintly good character is mm-hmm. also very flat.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to write, or I've always wanted to write into the gray.
Mm-hmm.
I always love all my characters. I love them to death, even though they make terrible choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that love hopefully translates to the page and to the reader. So you can follow them even though they're they're doing awful things.
Oh, I, you know, there were times I wanted to pull Maya back from the edge of the cliff and just say, stop what you're doing.
No,
don't do that.
Away.
You're going to regret it.
Right. Me too.
Yeah. So Lucas becomes a patient of Maya's at the Congdon Psychiatric Facility, a place where she previously had been a patient.
Mm-hmm.
So you must have done quite a bit of research into mental health care and mental health care facilities for this book.
I did. Coming into this book, I've had people that very close to me who have struggled with mental illness, and I think that's something that most of us can say, that we've dealt with mental health issues either for ourselves or for our loved ones. So I came to write Leave No Trace with a certain sensibility of compassion and wanting to showcase all different types of people
mm-hmm.
with, you know, individual strengths and journeys who are dealing with mental health problems, because I think that's very reflective of our society and we don't talk about it as much as we should. In terms of the formal research, I read as many, you know, publicly available and in peer-reviewed articles as I could find about mental health care facilities and how it's evolved. But of course, you know, we are going through kind of a crisis of funding, of resources.
Right.
We, in Minnesota, we only have one state hospital, the Minnesota State Psychiatric Hospital outside of Mankato
mm-hmm.
in St. Peter, Minnesota, that's the only state hospital in the entire, you know, state that's available for forensic patients. And I tried, they probably had me on some sort of blacklist. I was making calls and leaving messages and really trying to see if I could get in there and get a tour or at least talk to somebody. But it seems like a very closed operation. You know, they weren't interested in talking to me anyway, which I understand. I didn't have any legitimate business there. I was looking to do some research and try to bring Congdon Psychiatric Facility to life in a very realistic way.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the actual physical presence that the environment of Congdon Psychiatric Facility comes from just what I was able to read and see online
mm-hmm.
From other facilities, but I wasn't able to get that tour. I really wanted it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can imagine. It seems like they've been on lockdown for a while, but...
Right,
yeah.
Right. And, you know, you don't know, you know, what's going on inside or their challenges or logistics, so it's you don't want to...
Right.
Assume, you know, they're just, oh, they don't like writers.
Right. Well, you're listening to Superior Reads, and today we're talking to author Mindy Mejia about her new book, Leave No Trace. In Leave No Trace, you also deal with themes of loss, and of course, as we discussed, mental illness. Are there other themes that you'd like to examine with other books in the future?
Yes. I mean, definitely. There's always more to examine, you know, in your psyche, in your past. There's always issues that are bubbling up
mm-hmm.
as you're living. One of the other things that I did want to explore in Leave No Trace in particular was a parent-child relationship
mm-hmm.
And that very strong connection that happens between our parents and then our children and ourselves. And so that was something that I started to deal with a little bit in Leave No Trace and can definitely see that coming up, but, you know, again, as a theme
mm-hmm.
in my work going forward and just issues of identity and who we are in this rapidly evolving world.
Yeah, I really think you did a great job of examining Maya's relationship with her mother and that mother loss that she had and some of your just metaphors with the agate and whatnot. And readers, listeners, you'll just have to read it to find out what we're talking about. But it's right. It's really fantastic what you did there. It really drew me in.
Oh, thank you. Good. That's good to hear.
And it really showed the motivation for why she wanted to help Lucas and why she was so drawn to him.
Yes. Yeah. It can't just be a job. You know, it had to pull at her, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about setting. The Boundary Waters canoe area features predominantly in the Leave No Trace. That's the wilderness that Lucas and his father disappear into. Tell us a little bit about how you use setting in your novels.
Because setting is always, for me, very foundational in all of my books. I believe setting to be of even greater importance than character, because, I mean, setting feeds the character. Setting is what allows a character to either flourish or constrains them. So whenever I'm thinking about a book or the next book, the setting is one of the first elements that I have to figure out, and that there's always thematic considerations when it comes to setting. Like the Boundary Waters in particular was perfect because it has that pristine wilderness. You know, it's the outside to every structure, to every, you know, human architecture and community and everything that we take for granted in urban areas. So it was the perfect diametric opposite to Duluth, which is where, you know, the bulk of the action of the book takes place. Setting for me is, and I think when to skip. When I hear from readers, I almost always hear that I loved where this book took place. And to be fair, this is like predominantly Minnesota readers, but they say that, you know, I loved that I knew the place, that I could see the setting, that, you know, it grounded them and created a home, you know, for them to read about this world. And so, and I hear that more than I hear that I loved this character. I hear that I loved the place more. Mm-hmm. So that's how I feel when I'm thinking about setting.
Yeah. Did you do some personal research? Did you take a little trip?
I did. Yes. I took my first trip into the Boundary Waters last summer. I'm kind of ashamed that I'd never gotten there before, but I'm not a big camper. I tend to prefer a mattress underneath me when I'm sleeping.
They have some pretty cushy cushions now you can bring into your tent.
It's true. Yeah, we did have a little cushion. So two friends and I went in to the Boundary Waters last August and just had a phenomenal trip. I mean, I'm a convert. I'm already planning my next one.
That's great. So what's currently on your bedside table to be read pile?
It does not all fit on the bedside table.
Spills over onto the floor and in every room of the house.
Yes. I think a few of the titles I'm most excited about. Kelly Garrett just came out with Hollywood Ending, which is her follow-up to Hollywood Homicide that was out last year. And so that one is just a really fun kind of high fashion LA with an amateur sleuth. Really fun. Funny and witty, and so I'm looking forward to that follow-up, The Hollywood Ending. And then In Her Bones by Kate Moretti just came out actually the same day that Leave No Trace did, on September 4th, and I'm a big fan of Kate's work. This one is about a woman whose mother was a notorious serial killer, and she becomes obsessed with the victim's families. And
wow, so that sounds fascinating.
Doesn't it? Yeah. So I'm reading that one. And then I just came back from VoucherCon as the World Mystery Writing Convention, which always like doubles your to-be-read pile.
Yeah.
But one of the books that I was handed there is one that's coming out next year that sounded fascinating. It's called The Last by Hannah Jameson. And it was pitched to me as an Agatha Christie-style murder mystery during nuclear Armageddon.
Whoa.
I was like, well, you have to read that, right?
Right. You might have to move that up.
Yeah, I know that one. I don't think that one's coming out until April, but I'm very excited to get an advanced copy of that one.
Yeah, wow. It sounds like a fun conference, too, that you were at.
It is. It's a great conference. It's a wonderful conference because it's full of readers and writers and publishing, you know, industry types. So it's this really nice common ground where everybody can come together with this love of mystery and thrillers.
Oh,
and it's also coming. We just pitched a proposal. And Devin Abraham of Once Upon a Crime in Minneapolis the proposal to have BoucherCon come to Minneapolis, and we got it. So it's a ways out, 2022.
Okay.
So 4 years from now, that convention will be in Minnesota.
Oh, how fun.
Yes.
So, Mindy, is there one author in particular who's influenced your writing?
There's always so many, right? But I would say in terms of kind of forming my writing aesthetic and my style and, you know, kind of a goal for myself, I've always admired Audrey Niffenegger, who, you know, in addition to her graphic novels, wrote The Time Traveler's Wife and Her Fearful Symmetry. I love her writing style, and also her ability to weave a story, no matter if it's a love story or a ghost story. And she retains a very strong authorial identity, even, you know, while she drastically switches genres. So I think that's amazing whenever a writer can do that, and I love her writing style.
Oh, cool. So what are you working on now, and what can we look forward to from you in the near future or a year from now? What's coming up next?
Yeah, hopefully sometime next year around then. This next book will be coming out that I'm working on now. So I've come home to the Twin Cities for my fourth book. I'm always going to be writing in Minnesota, I think. It's just the landscape, you know, of my imagination. But this one is about a forensic accountant who's racing to find $10 million that's gone missing from an elite kickboxing gym.
Wow.
She becomes kind of dangerously involved in the toxic marriage between these two powerful owners.
Well, that sounds fascinating and interesting because you come from a finance background as well, right?
I do, yeah. So I'm using a lot of my former career and knowledge in this new book. The research has been a lot less, but I do need to join a kickboxing gym.
Oh, wow. So something on your bucket list.
That's some research that needs to happen.
Oh, that's great. Well, you're listening to Superior Reads, and we're talking to author Mindy Mejia about her new book, Leave No Trace. So if you could go back in time, Mindy, what advice would you give your younger self as a writer just starting out? What do they need to know?
I would tell my younger self, as well as any writer starting out right now and getting a foot in the business, to be more confident.
Mm-hmm.
I think women in particular, I think, are vulnerable to this, you know, the idea of the imposter syndrome and feeling like maybe they don't deserve their position or any success that they get. You know, there's that fear of being arrogant, but there's a big difference between confidence and arrogance.
Yeah.
And I wish my younger self could have enjoyed the confidence that I have now, and maybe I would have pursued more opportunities or, you know, worked harder in certain areas than I had if I had had that confidence behind me. So there's always more to learn, you know, that as long as you have that humility, I think embrace the confidence too.
That's great advice, and especially, as you said, for women. Do you have a daughter? Are you working? Are you teaching her this?
I do. Yes, I do. She also she has an older brother too, and he's a great confidence booster for her. So she's always you know, right there at his side and keeping up with him. So I'm encouraging that in both of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, we've been talking with Mindy Mejia, author of Leave No Trace. Thanks so much, Mindy, for being with us today here on Superior Reads. This is Lynn Salisbury with Superior Reads, a place for readers and writers of all ages to keep up to date on the local and national book scene. Listen for us on the fourth Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. and the following Saturday at 6 a.m. Join us next month when we speak with William Kent Kruger about his newest in the Cork O'Connor series, Desolation Mountain. Thanks again, Mindy.
Thank you, Lynn.